23 says, "And Jesus answered them, saying, The hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal. If any man serve me, let him follow me, and where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor." So the theme verse is verse 24. Jesus says, he uses the words verily, verily, and it's a term that he would, when Jesus said that, it was like saying truly, truly. He wanted everybody to get the concept. And he says, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. I went snitching on the cornfield over there where they had harvested corn and found some corn. Just to kind of give us an example, here's, you might not hardly be able to see it, but here's one corn kernel. How many ears of corn does a corn plant normally have? Three? Online it said one. If it's a good corn plant, then it has one. Okay. It depends. Some plants have one, some have two. I have seen corn plants with three. This is the fruit that a corn plant brings. And on average, every corn cob has 800 kernels on it. And if a corn plant has two cobs on it, and they each have 800 kernels, that's 1,600 of these little corn kernels. And I find it amazing. You know, what Jesus is saying here is, this here would never come about if this corn kernel was not put in the ground and it dies. And except that happens to this corn kernel, I can put it up on a shelf somewhere at home, leave it there, and it'll stay there for, I mean, if it's dried, it'll probably stay there for years and years, and it'll abide alone. It brings no fruit. It's just there. But I put it in the ground, in good soil. It grows, the plant grows, and if the corn plant produces two of these, and each of them has 800 kernels, that's 1,600 kernels, you take all 1,600 of those kernels, you put them in the ground, and they all produce a plant that also produces two cobs with 800 kernels on it, which would probably be an ideal situation. But just as an example, before you know it, you would run out of land. You would not be able to plant all these corn kernels. And you know, this morning we're having communion. We're remembering the death, resurrection of Jesus. Jesus was the prime example of dying to self. He put his life, laid down his life. He says in one place that nobody made him do it. He chose. He gave his life so that we could be saved. And so a lot of times this verse, if we stop with this verse, it would seem like he's talking about just about himself, because in verse 23 it says, "The hour has come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit." But then in verse 25, he says, "He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto life eternal." So it's clear that it's not, he's not just talking about him giving his life. He that loveth his life shall lose it. And, you know, this past week I've been thinking about this a lot. I listened to a couple messages and I realized that I have more dying to do. The more I look at scriptures, the more I look at my life, I evaluate my life, I realize that I have a lot of dying to self to do. There's areas in my life where I still need to die to self. And unless we do that, unless we allow ourselves, unless we die to self, we will abide alone. We will not bear fruit. If I'm not willing to die to self, God is not able to use me in his kingdom. And as long as we have self, our rights, my ambitions, my plans for my life, all of those things, as long as they are on the throne in our hearts, God is unable to use us. Let's turn to, just going to read some scriptures before I go into a story from a man in the Old Testament. Let's turn to Luke chapter 9, verse 23. Jesus says, "And he said to them all, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me." So here you see, it's not a one-time sinner's prayer. You have this salvation experience and happy ever after. It's a daily. He says, if any man will come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. For whosoever will save his life shall lose it, but whosoever will lose his life for my sake, the same shall save it. For what is a man advantaged if he gain the whole world and lose himself or be cast away? For whosoever shall be ashamed of me and of my words, of him shall the Son of Man be ashamed when he shall come in his own glory and in his Father's and of the holy angels. Next, Luke chapter 14. Verse 26 and 20 through verse 26 and 27. If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever doth not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. And then we jump down to 33. So likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. And I was so challenged by these verses. Jesus is not talking here about, he's not talking about me, you know, calling up my dad, my mom, and say, you know, I hate you. I don't want to talk to you anymore. I'm serving the Lord now, and this is gone. Our relationship is over. It's not what Jesus is talking about, but what he's saying is, if we are not willing to let go of mom, dad, our siblings, our family, our church family, our everything, like verse 27. In verse 33, I think it was. Yeah, whosoever he be that forsaketh not all that he hath. Your relationships, your possessions, your ego, your everything. He doesn't say that it's going to be hard for that person to be a disciple. He says, he cannot be my disciple. And that's a very high calling. For us to, I was listening to this message on Sermon Index, and this brother was saying that he's talked to Christians before that said when they went to church, they really they felt like they died to self because, you know, you go to church and you look outside on a nice summer day and you're like, oh, man, I could have gone fishing. But you know what? I'm a Christian. I'm dying to self today. I'm going to die to my fleshly desires. But how, you know, we listen to that and we're like, wow, how could somebody do that? But if when I stopped and when I started thinking about my life, I was like, you know what, I think there's areas in my life where I think I died to self, but it's not really the real thing yet. But we live in a culture, we live in a society where it seems like that's pretty much the extent of dying to self that we understand a lot of times. But Jesus is talking about something far greater than that. Galatians 2, verse 20. Paul says, I am crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. Yet not I, but Christ liveth in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not frustrate the grace of God, for if righteousness come by the law, then Christ is dead in vain. So Paul says he's crucified with Christ. Nevertheless, I live. And then later on, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loveth me. Who loved me and gave himself for me. So there is an area of self that we, a lot of us, often don't even realize that we have, and that is self-righteousness. We can look at those around us and we can assume and think that, oh, I would never do that, or I would never live like that. And we start putting self up on the throne and saying, I am not like him, you know, like the Pharisee. Thank you, Lord, that I am not like the publican. And we start, you know, it's a religious. The other quote that I was reading was read this week, the dying Christianity, dying to self Christianity, has never and will never be popular because dying is not popular. And so, you know, a lot of religions, even Muslims, they sacrifice a lot of things. They sacrifice a lot of things in their life to follow Muhammad. They lay down their physical lives for it. But the one thing they do not die to self is their self-righteousness. Their religion works in a way where, from my understanding, is if your good outdoes the bad, at the end, you're going to make it. And so they rely on self. They rely on their self-righteousness. But even that needs to die. Our self-righteousness needs to die. Philippians 2, verse 5 through 8. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus, who being in the form of God thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation and took upon him the form of a servant and was made in the likeness of man. And being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even the death of the cross. What did Jesus die to when he gave his life on the cross? He died to his reputation. And I heard a brother pray this morning for the hurting in our midst. And in a group this size, you know, there's most likely someone that's this morning discouraged. There's probably somebody that feels like they're defeated in a certain area of life, and yet to go and ask for help would really ruin your reputation. What are people going to think about me? And you right away, you see self. Self is there, and you keep living a life of defeat, discouragement, because I don't want them to know that I also struggle with this in my life. I don't want, and so you're holding on to your reputation. But Jesus, or Paul says here, let the mind of Christ, the same mind that Christ had, let it be in you, who being in the form of God thought it not robbery to be equal with God, but made himself of no reputation. He was a son of God, and he died the death of a cross. He was nailed to the cross, and he gave up his reputation. He gave up everything. Turn to Romans 10, verse 1. Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved, for I bear them record that they have a zeal of God, but not according to knowledge. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness, and going about to establish their own righteousness, have not submitted themselves unto the righteousness of God. For Christ is the end of the law for righteousness to everyone that believeth. And here you see very clearly the concept of self-righteousness. They know God, they have a form of godliness, but they were building on their own righteousness. So when we think of dying to self, that includes my ambitions, my plans for my life, my personality, anything that belongs to me, I need to give up. All these things need to be given to the Lord. Romans 12, verse 1 says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that ye present yourself, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God, which is your reasonable service. I would like to go through a story of a man in the Old Testament, Joseph. Joseph was somebody that I didn't know this before. I've read through Genesis fairly often. But Joseph went through a tremendous, tremendously difficult time in his life. And nowhere do we find that in the scriptures that Joseph ever murmured against God. And yet he had such a difficult life. And Joseph was 17 years old when Genesis starts, when the story of Joseph begins. And he was not made the ruler of Egypt till he was 30. He went through a 13-year dark time of life, and he did not murmur. And how many of you are 17 here this morning? Raise your hand. Daniel Wheeler is 17. There's a few. But I remember when I was 17 years old, my sister reminded me on October 31st, Halloween Day, that it's 15 years ago that I got baptized on Halloween Day. And in those 15 years, God has taught me a lot of things. I've had to die to self many a time. And when I was reading this story, I was reminded of when I was 17 years old, there was 2 years in my teenage years where my family, we did not go to church anywhere. We would go visit places and stuff, but most Sundays we would sit at home. And at that age, you're very ambitious. You want to do stuff. You want to do things with friends. But I would say, I've told people before that there was 2 years of my life during that time where that I call the dark years of my life. And, you know, I still had my parents around. I still had siblings. I still had the Bible. I still had, you know, God was still there. But I went through a time in my life where I was very discouraged. I was defeated by sin. I did not do well. And I remember one morning, I went for a walk, and I was so discouraged that, you know, my mom could read me very well. Anyways, she met me out on the road. She went for a walk too, and she asked me what was going on, and I told her that. I said, the Christian life is not for me. I said, it's not possible. I'm done. I'm done with Jesus. I don't want. I'm tired of trying to do what's right. I'm done with all of that. And yet, you know, God wasn't done with me. He didn't let me go. My conscience bothered me. I was, for the next couple days after that, I was a miserable wreck. I remember we played volleyball as a family, and yeah, I was just, nobody enjoyed the game. I was a spiritual wreck. But there was a lot of self on the throne. There was a lot of self in my life, and I was trying to live the Christian life. I was discouraged. I was this. There was a lot of myself evident in my life. I was concerned about myself. And it reminded me of that time, because Joseph was also 17 when he was sold into Egypt, and he stayed faithful. And let's read, we're going to read here in Genesis chapter 37. Start in verse 1. And Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. And these are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren, and the lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaf stood round about and made obeisance to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream, and told it his brethren, and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more, and behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren, and his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed the saying. I don't think that Joseph, when he told his brethren the dream, I don't know, but I don't think that Joseph necessarily thought or believed that his brethren were going to bow down to him. He was a 17-year-old young man, and he had it was a weird dream. He told his brothers, I had this dream. And then he had another dream, But his brothers, being much older than him, you can just see, and also considering the fact that his brothers knew that their dad, their father, loved Joseph more than them, they listen to the dreams and they're like, huh, you think we're going to bow down to you? Not a chance. And they hated him all the more. And somewhere in Joseph's life, Joseph had learned to honor God in his life, because this story starts with, in verse 3, it says that Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. So Joseph had, at 17 years old, Joseph knew right from wrong, and he would tell his father about the evil that his brothers were doing. And that only added to their hatred of him. And so here he comes and he tells them their dreams. I don't think that Joseph would have thought in his mind, oh yeah, my brothers are going to bow down to me one day. Like, I don't think he carried himself. He was just like, this is a weird dream. Verse 12. And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem? Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. And he said to him, go, I pray thee, see whether it be well with thy brethren and well with the flocks, and bring me word again. So he went, sent him out of the vale of Hebron, and he went, came to Shechem, and a certain man found him, and behold, he was wandering in the field, and the man asked him, saying, what seekest thou? And he said, I seek my brethren. Tell me, I pray thee, where they feed their flocks. And the man said, they are departed hence, for I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. And Joseph went after his brethren and found them in Dothan. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. His brothers could not forget those dreams, those weird dreams. And here's Joseph. He comes out to see his brothers, see how they're doing. His father asked him to go check up on them. And as soon as they see him, oh, here comes the dreamer. Let's put him in. Let's kill him. Let's finish him off. Get him out of our way. And Reuben, verse 21, and Reuben heard it, and he delivered him out of their hands and said, let us not kill him. And Reuben said unto them, shed no blood, but cast him into this pit that is in the wilderness, and lay not hand upon him, that he might rid him out of their hands to deliver him to his father again. So one of them at least had a conscience that was bothering him enough that he did not want him to be killed. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into the pit, and the pit was empty, and there was no water in it. And they sat down to eat bread, and they lifted up their eyes and looked, and behold, a company of Ishmaelites came from Gilead with their camels, bearing spicery and balm and myrrh, going to carry it down to Egypt. It doesn't say anything here about Joseph arguing with his brothers, but I would assume any 17-year-old, when 11 of your brothers gather around you and they're going to throw you in a pit, you would probably at least reason with them. You're like, why? Like, what have I done? Like, what are you doing? Why are you putting me in this pit? But he was overpowered. He was the youngest of them there, and they cast him into the pit. And that's where Joseph's story of darkness, if you could call it that, it starts. He's thrown into this dark pit. His brothers, they sit down, they eat their bread, and they're I'm guessing they're probably sitting around sharing crude jokes about Joseph. Joseph can probably hear them. And Joseph's down in there thinking about, you know what, I'm probably done. My brothers hate me. So along comes the company of Ishmaelites. His brothers decide not to kill him. They sell him to the Ishmaelites. And Joseph gets, you know, they come and they probably drop a rope down there and they lift him out. And Joseph's probably thinking, maybe I get a chance. Bono, they take him to the camels. I don't know if he had to walk behind the camels or what how it transpired, but he gets sold and he gets taken to Egypt. Verse 36, and the Midianites sold him into Egypt unto Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh's and captain of the guard. And one of the things that Joseph, this is one of the first things Joseph died to self in. Joseph was a 17-year-old, ambitious man, young man. He had plans, probably had plans for his life. But Joseph had to die to his youthful ambitions. He had to lay down his dreams of his future. He had to just drop it. He was now owned by another man. He had no hope of redemption. I'm sure he was thinking to himself, oh, if I could get out of this. Like, I don't want to be in Egypt. But he had to die to his youthful ambitions. He became nothing. He had no rights. He lived in a foreign... He was torn from a familiar land. He was brought into a foreign land. And there he was. What's he supposed to do? And he was sold to Potiphar. We jump over to Chapter 39, verse 1, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him out of the hands of Ishmael, of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. So Joseph died to his youthful ambitions. He died to, well, there's a couple other things. Joseph died to favoritism. I'm sure that at 17 years old, he knew that his father loved him more than his brothers. And that's, who doesn't like to be appreciated? We like when we feel appreciated. And I'm sure Joseph thought, probably, I believe he was a normal man. He probably sometimes kind of reveled in the thought that my dad likes me more than my brothers. He had to die to favoritism. His father wasn't around. He was rudely snatched out of that and into a place where nobody cared whether he lived or died. He was put in a place where he didn't know anybody. There was nobody to love him. He was snatched from that. The other thing he had to die to was, Joseph had to die to his freedom. He could no longer do as he pleased. He could no longer go and do what he wanted to do and when he wanted to do it. Joseph had no scripture in this position of death to self. Joseph had no scripture to draw strength from. He had nobody else around him that could point him to God. Joseph was alone. And there he was. There was no Bible written at this time. He had no, when we look at the story of Joseph, we can read 13 years worth of material of his life in a short time, and we kind of just put it all in one story. But if you stop and think for a bit, at 17 years old, if you knew, I'm giving my heart to Lord Jesus, and you knew in the next 13 years, you're going to be sold into slavery. You're going to be unjustly accused of something you did not do, and then thrown in jail. Would you sign up? Would you be like, yes, Lord, I'm good to go? Or would that make you stop and be like, I don't know. I don't know if I could handle that for 17 years or 13 years. Joseph did. So when we see the whole story, we see God's hand moving in all of it. But Joseph was living in the moment. He didn't have that whole story to look back to and be like, oh yeah, God's going to work this out. He's going to work that out. He's going to work all these details out. And everything's going to work out. Joseph didn't have that. He was in a foreign country, a foreign language, a foreign culture, foreign foods, and all alone. But he had God with him. And yet, we do not find that Joseph murmured. It says, when he was brought into Pharaoh, okay, another thing about his dreams. Joseph, when he had to let go of his ambitions and dreams, even though Joseph probably didn't know what those dreams were about, but I wonder, when he was sold into Egypt, if Joseph probably thought to himself, I wonder if those dreams have some significance to him. They indicated of something great to happen. So he's maybe thinking to himself, you know, I'm in Egypt, and God's going to, but how could God do something great? Because I'm now a slave. I can't do anything. And so when he is in Potiphar's house, it says, and the Lord, verse 2, and the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that his master had to prosper in Joseph's hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into Joseph's hand. And it came to pass from the time that he made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. All of a sudden, the ruler of Potiphar's crops are just, he's getting bumper crops. He's getting God's blessing. God poured out his blessing upon Potiphar's house. All because of one lonely 17-year-old servant. And God blessed this ungodly man's house, everything in his house, all his crops. It was like, so you can imagine Joseph's watching all this, and Joseph's thinking, oh yeah, there we go. God's starting to do something. Maybe soon I'm going to, you know, and he's probably thinking back on his dreams, and he's thinking, maybe these dreams have some significance to them. And so he's, you know, he's probably seeing light at the end of the tunnel. He's like, maybe I'm going to get out of this. I'm working myself up to a high standing point. He had died to, the other thing he died to when he went there is Joseph died to his family. He did not see his family for 20 years. Now, today, when we think of missions, we think of going across seas or wherever. You know, for John and Susie, they're planning on going to Thailand. Well, you know, you can go there, and Henry and Lena have come back every couple years. They come back, we see them. It was not, Joseph didn't have the option of going to Egypt and being like, oh yeah, like in 2 years I'm going to get a furlough from this and I'm going to go home and spend some, well, for one, his brothers hated him. His father loved him, but his brothers hated him. He probably didn't miss his brothers a whole lot. I don't know. But I would assume even if your brothers hated you, if you are in such a lonely place, you would still be like, oh, I wish I could see my brothers. But he couldn't. He was gone. He had to die to his family. He had to die to his country. The Egyptians, they despised the Hebrews. The Egyptians despised shepherds. And that's who he was. And he came right. He didn't have a mission seminar to go to and spend a couple years adapting to the Egyptian culture. He went from Canaan to Egypt, and he was there. And he had to die to his culture. He had to die to his food. Every culture has different foods. He had to die to his language. He was forced to learn a new language. He had to die. He had to die to all these things. They were gone. They were history. He had no promise of ever seeing those things again. Joseph had to die to love. One of the things that often encourages us, you know, I was reading about I forget what his name was, a preacher from years ago. He was popular, but he was not well-liked by a lot of people because of the truth he shared. And somebody had asked him one time, how do you keep going? He said, my family loves me. Joseph didn't have family to love him. He was alone, and yet he did not murmur. He died to love, and that's what he's doing. And he's in that position. He is in Potiphar's house. He's being faithful. And God blesses everything he touches. Everything he does, God's with him. And Potiphar, as a matter of fact, he was so much in authority in Potiphar's house. It says that in verse 6, and he, Potiphar, left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had save the bread which he did eat. Potiphar did not know what his crops were doing. Potiphar did not know how much money he had. Potiphar did not know anything about his owner, what he owned, but the bread that he ate at his table. That's how much. That's the reputation Joseph had with Potiphar. Potiphar trusted Joseph. He saw God was with him, and he entrusted everything to Joseph. Verse 7. The last part of verse 6. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. Joseph had a really good reputation. I'm sure everybody in Egypt knew who Joseph was. Joseph had a good reputation. So you could imagine Joseph is now coming to a place where he is thinking, yeah, see, I'm a goodly person. Everybody knows about me. And he's thinking, yes, maybe I get to see my family again someday. Verse 7, and it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast eyes upon Joseph, and she said, lie with me. And he refused and said unto his master's wife, behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? Joseph would not yield to immorality. He would not yield to fornication. And he said, it's interesting, I think it's amazing that Joseph at his age, he wasn't concerned so much about what Potiphar would think about it, but he said, how can I do this wickedness against God? There was no other godly person around him. There was no godly reputation for him to upkeep with other people because he was alone. And yet he would not, because he was, I cannot sin against God. And it came to pass as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, see, he hath brought, speaking about Potiphar, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us, and to mock me. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his lord Potiphar came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, the Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. Has any of you ever experienced somebody spreading a false story about you? No, I didn't do that. I would never do that. And Joseph, here she is, Potiphar trusted him with everything he had. And yet Potiphar believed his wife's story. And it says, and when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, after this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. Joseph had a very good reputation. Now, Joseph had to die to his reputation. And I think, when I was meditating on this week, I think that's probably one of the hardest things we can die to, is our reputation. If someone goes and slanders someone else, if someone goes and slanders me and says, tells everybody, did you hear what he did? Did you hear? Even if it weren't true, self wants to rise up, and we're like, no, I'm going to defend myself. I would never do that. And I think there's a place for us to speak truth, and it doesn't say anything about Joseph doing it, but I think Joseph probably talked to Potiphar and said, that's not what happened. But Potiphar didn't believe him. And from that position of wealth where Joseph was thinking, maybe, boom, right down to the bottom, he got put into prison in shekels where the king's prisoners were, and the other prisoners around him, they probably, hey, why are you here? There was a prison, I forget where this prison was, but the prison guard, somebody had gone, the prison guard had taken him through this prison, and this prison guard had said, every prisoner in here has done nothing wrong. What he meant was, every one of them, well, hadn't died to their reputation. They're like, no, we didn't do that. We're unjust here. We're here for unjust reasons. So if we think about that, a lot of prisoners, they're like, I shouldn't be here. And Joseph, of all people, shouldn't be in prison. And so he's there with the other prisoners, and the other prisoners probably ask him, what are you doing here, you Hebrew kid? What brings you here? Oh, I shouldn't be here. You know, I was accused. Oh, we know that story. We were there too. We didn't think we did anything wrong. Wouldn't listen to him. Nobody, I'm assuming nobody would listen to him. Joseph's reputation was gone. He died to it. He had to die to it. And so there he sits in prison now. He's lost his youthful ambitions. He's lost his favoritism. He's lost his freedom. He already had lost his freedom when he was sold to be a slave. He lost his family. He lost his country, language, food, culture. He had nobody to love him. And now Joseph lost his reputation. And I cannot help but think that Joseph was thinking, this is it. There is surely nothing else that could go worse. I will never come out of here. So he sits there in prison, and later on in chapter 39, chapter 40, I think. Well, even in prison there, in verse, chapter 39 still, verse 20, 21, it says, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it." God was with him again. He was alone, but God was with him. And he stayed faithful. He stayed faithful with the little things, even though he had to die to all these things. And then two other prisoners come in there, the baker and the butler of Pharaoh. They get put in prison, and they dream dreams. And they come to Joseph, and they ask him to interpret his dreams. And he interprets their dreams. And he tells one of them, I'm trying to see where it was. The butler? Was the butler the one that was not killed? The baker was. Yeah, I thought. Anyway, the butler, Joseph tells him, when he gets out, he says, "Please, remember me when you go before Pharaoh." He's like, there's a little bit of hope. Maybe I can get out of prison. The butler goes out. He's like, "Yes, I'm free. I'm good to go." And forgets about him. And at this time, Joseph is, I believe he's 28 years old at this time. And he sits there for another 2 years. Joseph had to die to all human help and trust. He couldn't. Joseph's life, this is what Joseph's life was. In all these 13 years, God was putting Joseph through a school, and he died to self over and over and over. And this is something that I've been burdened with for the last while, is how are you doing with dying to self? How much do you care about your reputation? How much do you care about your business? How much do you care about your vehicles, your possessions? How much do you care about baseball, hockey, work, things we see on the internet, things that make us feel like, oh yeah, I'm really doing really good. Maybe your business is doing good, or maybe there you have an opportunity at a business opportunity or at some business deal, and it's like, oh, I can't let go of this. Like, I know I won't have time for the Lord then, but I gotta, like. See, a lot of times, young people, they often feel like, naturally feel like people are, well, they're just picking on the things we do, maybe the sports or other things. But fathers, the things that we are not willing to let go of are often of a different nature. It has to do with, more often probably has to do with possessions, what we do with our time. We all have self to die to. No one in this room is exempt of dying to self. If we are not willing, and as we think of Jesus on the cross, he died for us. He gave up everything. He was beside with his Father, and he gave that up to come to this filthy earth to die on the cross. And every one of us has self to die for. It's difficult for us to die to our rights. Oh, you can't do that to me. Sometimes we ask questions, you know, if someone challenges me on something and it's dear to myself, my response may be, oh, where do you find a Bible verse for that? Not a spirit of humility, but more one of, I can't let go of that. Nope. And I think of, you know, as we think of the meetings, the revival meetings coming up, Corny coming to preach. Are we willing to allow things in our life to be stepped on that are precious to us? Are we willing to let go of relationships? Are we willing to let go of friends? Are we willing to let go of our reputation? Are we willing to let go of our possessions? Are we willing to let go of our culture? Are we willing to let go of, you could fill in the blanks, it's anything. And so often, I think I was so convicted this past week when I was studying this. I was thinking, you know, there's things in my life. There's sometimes in my life, one of the weaknesses I have is my personal ego. Am I willing to let go of it? My reputation. Am I willing to let go of my reputation and be like, you know what? It's self. It has to go. We go back to John, to that the theme verse here. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. Joseph could have responded completely different to his scenario. He could have fought his brothers. He could have fought the guys on the camel. He could have done a whole lot of things. God would have never been able to use him. Joseph could have taken the situation that happened with Potiphar's wife into his own hand and maybe just, I don't know, fled the situation. Well, he did flee, but he could have maybe, I'm sure he could have taken these things in his personal hands and just fought his way through. I have my rights. You can't put me in prison. You can't do this to me. I'm allowed to be free. Like, there's so many things that we, in our culture, we fight for. We live in a culture that everybody fights for their rights. Women have rights. Pets have rights. A lot of times more than people. And all of us, we want our rights. This is my space. You can't touch my space. You can't get into my personal bubble. But that's what church is all about. It's about getting into each other's lives, speaking into each other's lives, encouraging those that are discouraged, rebuking those that need to be rebuked. It's church life. But as long as we hold on to that kernel of self, will not. One preacher put it this way. He said, self is very willing to make great sacrifices as long as he can stay on the throne. Yeah, but I do all, haven't you noticed? If someone comes to me and rebukes me for something, but haven't you noticed? I share the gospel over here on Friday evening. I did. I it's a key word. I did this, I did that. This one preacher, he said, I was listening to a message about dying to self, and He said he had God had showed him one day that he's like, God had spoken to him and he said, if you did something great for the Lord, would you be okay if someone else got the credit? He's like, yeah, that would be okay. Anyway, he said the next day, he was at someone's house, and it was on a Sunday afternoon. They were just sitting around fellowshipping and in the living room talking, and one of the men says to the family where they're at, they're like, did you hear how so-and-so like spoke into these people's lives, this family's life, and how their life has changed and how God moved in their family? He said, it's amazing how this guy helped them out. And he said, he sat there and he's like, that was me. I was the one that spoke to that family. I was the one that helped them out. He has the name wrong. And he said, he just, to himself, he just smiled. Thank you, Lord. Are you willing to crucify your self-reputation, your self-ego? And we often sing this song, Take My Life and Let It Be. And often when we sing it, I look at the words and I'm like, do I really mean what it says? Take my life, take my hands, take my voice, take my silver, take my will, take my love. Is it true? Is it really true? When Corny Jansen comes and preaches here, are each one of us thinking to ourselves, I hope so-and-so shows up. I hope they really get the message. Or are we thinking, Lord, what do you want to teach me? What part of self do I still have on the throne? My encouragement to each one of us, and the challenge I would like to leave with us, is if you have not died to self, God cannot use you. And if God shows you areas in your life where you haven't died to self, lay it down. Don't hold on to it. Don't. If it's, like I was saying earlier, if it's something that you struggle with in your life and you feel like you don't have victory in, well, I can't share it with anybody because that would ruin my reputation. Let go of it. If that doesn't die in your life, you will never become fruitful. The interesting thing about a corn plant is, or any plant that bears fruit is, it was more corn kernels. The kernel of corn that was put in the ground that brought this forth, it's never seen again. You never see that kernel again. It's gone. It died. It died in the ground. It rotted. That corn kernel can't come up and be like, hey, everybody, it was me. Look at this. I did that. No, the corn kernel is gone. And I believe that that's something that we need to learn in our Christian life, is the glory belongs to the Lord. Anything that we, any fruit we bear, like God's glory. It's not my glory. It's not any of our glory. Yeah, let's allow God to change us. Let's allow ourselves to, let's lay down our lives and die to self. We do not have, we can't bear fruit if we don't die to self. Lord bless you.